Welcome to the South Carolina Lead, a podcast that breaks down state political news for you and provides insight on legislative happenings under the State House Dome in Columbia. Hello, I'm your host, Gavin Jackson, and this episode is for the week of April 23rd, 2019. We explore the $9 billion budget proposal the Senate approved last week, what changes were made from the House version, and what's in it for you. Hint, hint, a $50 tax rebate? What? Also, look alive, Rock Hill, because our next live taping takes place May 2nd at Rock Hill Brewing Company at 6 p.m. We'll have giveaways, swag, trivia, and more on May 2nd at 6 p.m. at Rock Hill Brewing Company. That's right, we're going to beat the Panthers to Rock Hill. The Lead is a podcast where we go behind the headlines with the reporters who write the stories affecting you. Every Tuesday, we give you a roundup of news, insight into the week's biggest stories, campaign trail intrigue, and a chaser of trivia. You can listen to all four sections while you spend your last week with these Game of Thrones characters that are going to die next week. Oh, spoiler. Enjoy them now. Or while listening to Old Town Road. Why do we like it? Because it's bad? I'm just listening to a meme, aren't I? Is this a Gen Y thing? And now, our brief quorum call. Quorum call is a term to see if there's a majority present, but here on the South Carolina Lead, we know a majority of the time that you're not always current with the news. So here's a quick recap of several top stories you should know about. Number one, Richard Quinn, one of South Carolina's top political kingmakers, was again indicted on 11 counts of perjury and one count of obstruction of justice, according to the Boston Courier. Quinn is accused of lying during two appearances before the state grand jury a year ago in cases against former state lawmakers Jim Harrison, John Corson, and Rick Quinn, his son. Quinn faces up to 55 years in prison if convicted on all the perjury charges and up to 10 years on the obstruction charge. Previous corruption charges against Quinn, including illegal lobbying and conspiracy, were dropped in 2017 as part of a guilty plea with Rick Quinn. Rick Quinn, a former House Majority Leader, agreed to resign from the legislature after pleading guilty to misconduct in office. As part of his deal, Richard agreed to testify before a state grand jury. Number two, Greenville will soon be home to the production line of the latest F-16 fighter plane produced by Lockheed Martin. This, according to GSA Business Report. The firm received a $1.2 billion contract to produce 16 new aircraft for the Royal Bahrain Air Force. Lockheed is moving the production line from Fort Worth, Texas to Greenville and is expected to create 150 jobs when production begins this fall. Greenville is home to a Lockheed facility that has provided maintenance and modification services for more than 30 years. Number three, the AP reports that Uber is releasing a new feature to help riders ensure they're getting into the right vehicles. The development comes several weeks after a University of South Carolina student, Samantha Josephson, was killed after getting into a car she had mistaken for her Uber. The company said it would send a push notification to riders, reminding them to check the driver and vehicle. It will also include the driver's name, a photo, license plate number, and vehicle make and model. The company is rolling this feature out first in Columbia and later nationwide. And number four, a Fritz Hollings follow-up. Check out South Carolina ETV's YouTube page for coverage of last week's funeral. And also, the Post and Courier reports the Charleston County Aviation Authority Board passed a resolution to name the Charleston International Airport passenger terminal after the longtime Democratic U.S. Senator and former governor who died April 6. A bill to rename the airport after Hollings stalled in the state Senate. And introducing a new segment called Florida Man News. Every week, we give you a headline, a little taste of the most captivating Florida man news the Sunshine State has to offer. It also makes us feel a little bit better about South Carolina. We begin with this Florida man headline. Florida man pretended to be a cop, police say. He was arrested after trying to pull over a real detective. And it's our 52nd episode, so we wanted to catch you up. A little Heinz condiment joke there, no? Just gonna go and bury that. We'll bury that joke with the lead. We do relish these jokes. The Senate passed its version of the state's $9 billion budget last week. It's not drastically different from the version the House sent it, but there were provisos added to it dealing with hot-button issues including education and offshore drilling. Teacher pay raises remain intact, along with a 2% cost of living raise for state employees and a $50 tax rebate thanks to the Mega Millions winner, among other things. The next steps in this process will be the budget's return to the House, where lawmakers will more than likely take issue with the changes and form a conference committee of three House lawmakers and three Senate lawmakers to hash out the differences. It's essentially where the legislative magic on big issues happens. But we're not there yet, so to recap all the fun changes and failed attempts to change the budget, we have reporters Shauna Adcox with the Post and Courier and Mayan Schechter with the State Newspaper. Thanks to you both for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thanks to you both making it through that long week last week.
It was grueling.
A lot of fun stuff, but it was punctuated with some fun moments from what I've been told, some good stand-up comedy.
Definitely.
It made for some good laughs, yes.
Shauna, just kind of jumping right in, can you maybe just run through some of the major differences we saw between what the Senate approved and what the House approved?
Sure. In the House, there's $85 million to go to Commerce to help recruit jobs to rural poor school districts. The Senate cut that to 50. But then the Senate gave $25 million for relief to farmers, and the House has none of that. That's on top of the $22 million that both chambers give for the FEMA match for last fall's flooding. The Senate gave a one-time $600 bonus to state employees on top of the 2% increase, and that's actually their first cost of living increase since 2016. And the Senate cut in half the judicial raises. They get like a 15% raise instead of a 33% raise in the House for judges. And the Senate gave $65 million for specifically maintenance to poor school districts, and that's $15 million more than the House.
And you mentioned that $85 million, the $50 million for Commerce, which helps attract infrastructure to those poor school districts in the state.
It's supposed to go to water and sewer projects, basically anything that's needed to attract a business to these rural school districts that don't have the infrastructure. And it specifically says it can go to a new school building, but that's only if that's what's needed to bring a business.
And $50 million, that's about half of what McMaster asked for
in
his original budget.
He asked for 100.
So, yeah. But still, it's interesting to point out, look, with some of these small changes, I mean, I guess a couple million dollars is maybe not small for us, but like looking at the beginning of the budget with McMaster's proposal till now and the House version, Mayan, it seems like there was a lot of, similarities, a lot of cohesion, a lot of teamwork again, like we've been talking about throughout this entire process.
If you ask budget writers, if you ask lawmakers how this budget process has been, they mostly all mention that this has been really a collaboration, which they haven't previously done with past governors. There's been a lot of communication on the forefront between House budget writers, House Budget Chairman Merle Smith, Senate Finance Chairman Hugh Leatherman, even the governor's office, so that they're all kind of moving in tandem together. So, yes, a lot of what you saw Governor McMaster pitch in his recommended executive budget in January, you're seeing some of that echoed in the House and Senate versions.
But then the new addition with the money for farmers, though, Shauna, do you think that's going to be a point of contention maybe when it goes back to the House? Or how was it easy to get that money in the budget in the first place in the Senate?
There was no argument on it at all. I guess it'll depend on how much the House wants to see. I mean, that difference between the $85 million and the $50 million. Interestingly enough, that $100 million original request, I mean, that was the idea of Senator John Matthews. Mm-hmm. McMaster credited John Matthews with really coming up with that to help. The point being that boosting rural school districts will take a better economy and better schools.
One thing we can all look forward to is the $50 taxpayer rebate, thanks to the Mega Millions winner. Is that still just per taxpayer, or is it just
per return?
So joint filers.
So the House actually has it per taxpayer, because they put an extra $35 million from tax collections to make that happen. The Senate has $6 million, and that makes it per return. And that's only per return if you have the tax liability.
Mm-hmm.
And like 45% of tax filers won't qualify.
Wow.
So definitely a fight between the people that receive this money, who gets
As allocated. Henry said, where's my $50?
Yeah.
But is that something? Didn't Henry try and put that money towards something else instead?
He had three different amendments. They only actually argued one because after that, it was clear that none of them were going to go anywhere. But the one they argued would have put that toward the pension liability.
And Sandy Senn also pitched using of that money toward
litter. Under her plan, we would have gotten 40 instead of 50, and the other would go to litter control.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And that also failed.
But the pension, again, some big issue that we really haven't even talked about following up on this year.
No, and Tom Davis made a point, which Sean Bennett, who's been leading the Senate's Tax Policy Committee, really pushed back against, but the year to solve the pension crisis was, 2 years ago, that we're so far past it now, and that obviously $61 million is a sliver of money that doesn't do much when you have a roughly $20 billion unfunded.
Yeah. When there's already money dedicated in the budget to go towards, you know, the pension, of course, because of that 2017 law. But again, I guess they're just trying to help fix more and more of that problem since it's really not going anywhere.
No.
But it seems like right now that this budget is basically an education budget and a pay raise budget. You know, you have these pay raises for state employees, judges, public defenders, Department of Disabilities, Special Needs, a lot of different people getting pay raises here. Like you said, some differences with the judge pay. But also education is in this budget, too. Is that because we're not going to see much happen with education this year, even though that's all we've been talking about and promised?
Extremely unlikely that bill is going to get to McMaster's desk this year.
The big reform bill that's in the Senate right now.
Right. If it even goes to the Senate floor, what's hitting the Senate floor is like half of what the House had. The committee panel in the Senate that's been going through this week after week, 15 meetings, they basically said, all right, we've reached a point where we don't have time to debate anymore. We'll lop this off for next year.
It'll be interesting, too. I think Senate Education Committee has a briefing this week on the bill. So I think it'll be interesting to see what the conversation is like, what the tone is like, given the fact that it doesn't appear that this bill is going to move. Also, given that there was a lot of attempts during the budget debate to take pieces of that bill and hook it onto the budget.
Because we did see them add a proviso in the Senate budget, right? Dealing with testing, essentially.
Eliminate three. The two social studies tests in 5th and 7th and 8th grade science. But the Senate is adamant about keeping the 10th grade and, of course, U.S. history.
So, again, we're just kind of piecemealing right now because those provisos, again, for people that don't really know, I mean, those are only good for a year.
Right.
And it's only, you know, it's very temporary fix for things like this.
Right. It was just purely suspended unless they move forward on it.
Do we have any idea about how the House is feeling about this kind of logjam right now in the Senate?
Can we
imagine what it is?
I imagine they're not surprised that the deliberative body is being deliberative, but frustration for sure.
Mm-hmm. And that's because we all thought we'd see something big happen this year. And it's, I mean, I know we've talked about this multiple times, but the Senate, you know, they kind of said it will probably be a 2-year process. We always thought that was more reform, funding formula reform based, not so much these other things that we're looking at within the
next
the bill.
So next year is going to be gargantuan, massive to gargantuan, because now it's going to have the funding issue in it, too. And we still haven't seen what the recommendations are from Revenue and Fiscal Affairs. That'll come out May 9th.
Mm-hmm. And obviously that faces, though, every single lawmaker being up for
re-election.
Yeah. So do they want to handle that? Do they want to take care of that as they're all heavily campaigning in such a charged election year? But also, and we've talked about this before, despite these other reforms or improvements or whatever word you want to attach to it happening, clearly the low-hanging fruit is these pay raises.
Mm-hmm.
And if you ask lawmakers if that is an improvement to helping schools, they'll say yes, versus teachers who are not particularly pleased with, the way that, I wouldn't say every single teacher, but not every single teacher is on board with how these pay raises are going to trickle out. The teachers who have, 0 to 4 years of experience can get up to nearly a 10%, you know, between
It's 26 and 10
raise, and versus older teachers who have been in the classroom for a while,
4%.
Roughly 4%. Yeah. So how that trickles down is upsetting to a lot of teachers. And teachers, frankly, are really just frustrated that, yes, a lot of these reforms or improvements that have been talked about for the past few months are not going to happen this year.
And then, Shana, also looking at the fate of Denmark Tech that's been something hotly debated, what do we see happen in the Senate version of the budget dealing with Denmark Tech?
So the Senate just completely eliminated what the House did, because the House would have turned Denmark Tech, taken it out of the technical school system, and made it into sort of a trade school, career and technology school for the area, for high school and adults. The Senate said no, and instead gave them $500,000 to help improve their equipment and stuff like that. They've got a lot of upgrade issues.
Mm-hmm. To kind of keep Denmark Tech viable again.
Right. I mean, frankly, they need much more than $500,000 if they're actually going to do that. But I guess $500,000 with a down payment of sorts.
And then looking, you know, technical colleges also got additional money, too, for programs in the budget. We don't have to get all into the millions in details. But there's also money in the budget to freeze tuition costs. That's something that we saw in the House budget, too. And then also money for additional mental health counselors, too, Mayan. And then it sounds like Margie Bright-Matthews also had an amendment in there to dedicate more money to
mental health counselors. Yeah, so there's $10 million in there for school resource officers for poor schools that can't afford to hire them. What Margie Bright-Matthews said is, all right, of that 10, schools can use 2 of that for full-time mental health counselors for their school. The $2.2 million that's in the larger budget, that's to go basically have sort of a rotating
like
90 of them that can go to schools as needed.
Mm-hmm. So this will be more for dedicated staff. But again, that's just a proviso.
And that's just $2 million. I don't know how many that would actually hire for full-timers.
But that's something, that, again, we saw teachers saying that they want. And again, that's something, again, that we're kind of piecemealing into the budget when it comes to education reforms.
Right. Correct. Yeah.
Speaking of provisos, offshore drilling was a big topic as well. And we saw them move forward with that.
Yeah, well, it passed, 40-4?
Yeah.
So, for all the fighting about what they're going to do, 40-4 was pretty overwhelming.
And just elaborate on that. That's to prevent them from allowing permitting.
Right. So it's a one-year hiatus. It basically says nobody can have a permit to build onshore infrastructure for the offshore, for what's needed for the offshore facilities.
Mm-hmm. And that's an easy way to kind of stymie that whole debate, because there were bills going through the State House this year.
Right. There were bills in both the House and the Senate that got stalled.
Just like the plastic bag ban bill.
Yes.
Which is also, they also tried to get into the proviso, right, in the budget
as
well?
Yeah, but that was eliminated.
Yeah.
Or that was tossed out.
Okay. Like a single-use
after
plastic bag.
Right.
Yes.
But yeah, I mean, again, like there was so much more additional money in the budget this year. You know, a lot of that's going towards deferred maintenance at public colleges, a new voting system, match for some veterans' nursing homes, money for reserves, the state's match for Hurricane Florence, like we talked about, prison safety upgrades,
infrastructure. They're not getting very many for those upgrades. $10 million out of, a total request of like $225 million.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, but again, is this, I think we always talk about this when we've been talking about the budget this year, but is this an easy way of saying, hey, we have enough money right here, right now to deal with some of these issues? We don't need a bond bill. Stop worrying. Stop asking about a bond bill because we have this money.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like that. There was definitely some conversation about it last year. But yeah, when you have roughly $1 billion in new money facing you, I don't think lawmakers are too quick to act on any kind of borrowing plan.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned using some of this money to do some of the things that they haven't done. I think that pay raise component in this budget is a huge emphasis of that. I mean, you mentioned the state employees who haven't seen a cost of living raise in what, since 2016.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So clearly there's an effort to use a lot of this new cash to help the employees that are employed through the state be able to live.
Yeah, because half of that budget was one-time money and roughly half
of it
was
for... Right, it's half and half, $500 million for one-time expenses, $500 million that you can use year after year. So that once you put, $50 million towards rising health care costs for employees, $50 million just to cover existing Medicare coverage that keeps rising, or Medicaid coverage, as Merle Smith pointed out, $1 billion goes fast.
Mm-hmm. And it sure did. And then just kind of looking forward, I mean, obviously we're gonna watch this bill go through the House and then the conference committee process. But as of today, we have 9 working days left in the session, if anyone can believe that, which ends on May 9th. So some issues could still be taken up after that date, but I don't think there's any talk of any special session or any amendments to the sine die.
I think now that Santee Cooper is out, out of the budget, that sort of alleviates some of
I don't
concern.
See a big hang-up on the budget conference.
Mm-hmm.
With maybe Denmark Tech, frankly.
And judicial salaries, maybe?
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
But then kind of just looking forward, China, we did see some movement on the Senate floor where they did put S-678 set for special debate dealing with the sale of Santee Cooper. Can you elaborate about what that bill does and what the future of the Senate could be looking like for the next few days?
Well, as it was originally filed, it basically told the governor to sell Santee Cooper. And, of course, that went over like a lead balloon. So what they did is change it and said, okay, so we're giving the process to the Department of Administration, which is a cabinet agency, which the governor controls. you handle the bidding process, come up with a really good best offer, and then send that offer back to the legislature to decide what to do, which, you know, under current state law, it's any sale of Santee Cooper must be handled by the legislature.
So what's the future in the Senate going to look like? Did we get any inkling about what that could look like? Because I feel like sometimes during session, when we get towards the end, things kind of get on these one or two topics, and that's what bogs us down.
I think it could easily bog down the Senate.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they could decide, we're going to go through this quickly, or it could be the excuse, frankly, to get things bogged down to not have to deal with education and other stuff.
Because, Mayan, like you said, we are going to see the education bill come out of Senate Education this week. They're going to talk about it. Is it going to make it out?
They're going to talk about it.
Yeah, I don't know if it'll make it out. Mm-hmm. I think they're going to have, I mean, now you're adding in every other lawmaker who hasn't been part of that process,
yeah, so
who hasn't sat in those meetings.
Right, so they're
hearings.
Just now getting a briefing before the committee. I mean, there's been plenty of senators who really don't have any clue as to what's in there.
Absolutely not. And particularly since the Senate bill is vastly so different from what
right.
the House bill is, and the House bill has been written about so many times that, yeah, it's going to be like opening a book for the first time for, I think, a lot of these lawmakers.
And that's not going to be a quick process by any means. Then I also saw the Senate Medical Affairs Committee is meeting on Thursday, and they're going to take up the medical marijuana bill. We already know that bill's not going to be able
to make
it.
I think that's on the agenda just to be on the agenda. I don't think it's moving.
Yeah. And even if it did,
I'm pretty positive it's not moving.
And even if it did move to the Senate floor, it's still got to be on the Senate floor, and it's not going to, I mean, there's no time for that
to
get anywhere. One of those long-standing bills that we see
come
up
again.
And
again, that, you know, it's past crossover anyway, so it doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of futile to deal with taking that up in the last couple weeks.
So kind of hard to predict anything that we're going to see going forward at this point.
I think Santee Cooper, and I think the Panthers bill.
Mm-hmm.
The Senate still, well, depending who you ask, needs to take that up or needs to deal with that. And the question mark remains, does Senator Harpootlian keep his name on it? Does he take it off? Does the Senate decide to do some kind of legislative loophole and go around him? So that really remains to be seen. But I think those are the two issues that will...
That they really probably want to focus on and close out, yeah. And then again, the budget should be probably somewhat easy process.
I don't think they're going to need a special session this year, but, you know, knock on wood. Who knows with the legislature?
We don't want to do any crystal ball gazing.
Yeah,
that was my knocking on wood. Well, still a lot to look forward to with the budget and the remainder of this session. Keep up with it all by following Sean Adcox with the Post and Courier and Mayan Schechter with the State Newspaper. Thanks to you both.
Thank you.
It's time again for some campaign trail news updates. We're looking at the latest in 2020 related movements affecting South Carolina, state campaign news, and highlights from the state's congressional delegation. Leading off, Vice President Mike Pence vacationed in Hilton Head Island this past weekend, according to the Island Packet newspaper. He was previously in the state in late March to help Senator Lindsey Graham kick off his fourth Senate campaign. Speaking of which, Lindsey Graham announced that he has $4.6 million on hand for his reelection bid, $2 million of which he raised in the first quarter of this year, according to the Post and Courier. Former South Carolina Democratic Party Chairman Jamie Harrison, who was considering a challenge, raised $231,000 since forming his exploratory committee on February 7th. And for some 2020 updates, Senator Bernie Sanders' campaign announced that he received the endorsement of seven Black South Carolina lawmakers. State Reps Wendell Gilliard, Cesar McKnight, Crystal Simmons, Ivory Thigpen, and Shedron Williams. Representatives Terry Alexander and Justin Bamberg, both of whom supported Sanders in 2016, are again backing him this time. The announcement came ahead of his second trip to South Carolina. Another big 2020 endorsement was from former State Representative Bakari Sellers in favor of California Senator Kamala Harris. Harris made her fourth trip to South Carolina last weekend. And former Texas Congressman Beto O'Rourke announced the endorsement of North Charleston Representative Marvin Pendarvis. O'Rourke has also staffed up, with McClatchy, D.C. reporting that he's hired Lauren Harper and Tyler Jones as his state director and senior advisor, respectively. Harper owns her own public affairs firm and is a former policy and communications advisor to Columbia Mayor Steve Benjamin. Jones also runs his own public affairs firm and was the chief strategist for Representative Joe Cunningham's 2018 campaign.
In our final section, Did You Know, we focus on one quirky function of the state, politics, or government. It's named after the parliamentary procedure that lawmakers use when speaking to each other. Did you know that South Carolina Public Radio's Russ McKinney is here with some state trivia for us? Well, he is. Russ, welcome.
Thanks.
Happy Easter.
Right.
What do you got for us?
Glad to be back. Well, you know, we've talked a lot in the last couple of weeks about the life and legacy of the late Fritz Hollings. I think that's the first time I've said late Fritz Hollings. Mm-hmm. Anyway, this one I think will be of special interest to you, you being the avid outdoorsman that you are.
Yes.
But I think one of the perhaps overlooked somewhat legacies of Senator Hollings is the Ace Basin in the Lowcountry of South Carolina. Just an incredible 350,000 acres, everything from sea islands to river systems to incredible marshes to maritime forest to hardwood forest. And, of course, Senator Hollings was instrumental in being able to put that 250,000 of that in somewhat of a protected area. It's just, again, one of the real jewels of South Carolina. ACE Basin, which stands for the ACE Natural Estuarine Research and Resource Center, ACE is the abbreviation for the three Lowcountry rivers that make up the Ace Basin that flow through that area of the state, kind of toward the St. Helena Sound. So our question is, what are those three rivers that ACE stands for? Well, A is for the Ashapoo River, or as the locals would say, Ashapoo. E stands for the abbreviation for the Edisto River, which I'm sure you're certainly aware of. So which river, which Lowcountry river that starts with C, does the C in ACE Basin stand for? A, Combahee River. B, Coosaw River. C, Cheehaw River. D, Colleton River.
Oh, let's get that again for not just me, for our listeners as well here.
Well-known Lowcountry, you know, rivers, especially to people like you who spend a lot of time
in
boats.
Yeah, I mean, just...
Fishing and shrimping and carrying
my,
on.
Up to my waders and shrimping in mud.
Okay. A, Combahee River. B, Coosaw River. C, Cheehaw River. D, Colleton River. Of course, we've already had the Ashapoo and the Edisto. So we need the C and
S. Yeah, yeah,
the
C. Well, just going to maybe make a stab. You know, when I'm out... outdoors, doing outdoors things that I do, I'm usually more in the upstate.
Oh, okay.
And
so you're more familiar with the Ennery and the Saluda and the Broad and
other rivers that
Tiger.
Yeah, yeah, right. Rivers. It's, you know, more of mountains.
Right.
Nothing against the Lowcountry or the Ace Basin, but I'm gonna go ahead and guess B.
Be Coosaw River.
Coosaw River?
Good guess.
Okay.
But the answer is A, Combahee River, or as the locals would say, Combee River.
Okay.
So, okay. So you have the Ashapoo River, the Combee River, and the Edisto Rivers, the three rivers, the Lowcountry rivers, flowing for the most part to St. Helena Sound, and they're pretty much are at the heart of the Ace Basin. It's basically between Beaufort and Charleston on the ocean side of 17.
It's
pretty much it. You have the Bear Island Wildlife Management Area, the Hollings Natural Resources Area in there, the Donnelly WMA. So it's really just an incredible part of the state. If you haven't seen, you should. And I realize you spend a lot of time there, but if you haven't been, you need to go.
I think the most time I spent was driving past it during the hurricane. I remember going between Beaufort and Charleston. It's on my list of things to do. My outdoors list of things to do. So
now the heart of the Ace Basin is probably the Bear Island Wildlife Management Area, where I happened to see a whooping crane one morning.
Aww. All right. Thank you, Russ, and thank you, Senator Fritz Hollings, late Senator Fritz Hollings. The South Carolina Lead is one of many ways SCETV wants to help keep you informed. Check out the latest news and live streams on SCETV.org. Listen to coverage from South Carolina Public Radio, and watch This Week in South Carolina, a show where I talk with the newsmakers of the week on SCETV, Friday at 7:30 p.m. and Sunday at 11:30 a.m. All of that, this podcast, and more is available on SCETV's super easy-to-use app and southcarolinapublicradio.org. Subscribe to us, and we'll have a new episode for you every Tuesday on Apple Podcasts. Search us easily on your Android, the NPR One app, or wherever you find podcasts. Follow us on Instagram at @SCLeadPod, where you can see photos from the studio, on assignment, and of course our dank memes. We're also on Twitter with the same handle at @SCLEDEPOD. We have swag, sticker swag that is. Send us a direct message on Twitter or Instagram with your address, and we'll send one your way. Email questions, comments, or your gripes to scled@scetv.org. The South Carolina Lead is produced in partnership with South Carolina ETV, South Carolina Public Radio, and a special thanks to the Post and Courier and the State Newspaper. Our producer is A.T. Shire. Sean Birch is our supervising producer. Tom Posey is our executive producer. This episode was recorded and produced in South Carolina Public Radio's studios here in Columbia on April 22nd, 2019. Happy Earth Day. I'm Gavin Jackson. Thanks for listening.
Secret message. Captain Planet is a vigilante who needs to be brought to justice.